Okay, welcome to another edition of the Friar Phil Show. I've got a little bit of a voice left over from yesterday. If you saw my video that I have pinned to my Twitter yesterday, you know that I was losing my voice and losing my mind with the San Diego Padres after we dropped two games from the Kansas City Royals, who are they're second to last in the entire league, the American League, if not the entire MLB. So I was fairly pissed off, to say the least. It's like old time Friar Phil with the videos. So if you want to see the angry, livid Friar Phil from yesterday, you can go ahead and check it out on Twitter and listen to the video yourself. I'm not going to put it on here today because it has too many cuss words and I have a lady on the telephone. All right. Before we get started with our guest, I want to present to you Frank the Tank Fleming. Only thing is, with Frank today, it's Frank after a win. And he is reasonable sounding. And I wanted to play this because we've been making fun of him yelling and screaming the last couple of podcasts. I want to present you a calmer Frank.
Well, that was quite a win for the Mets. Quite a win. Fientos gave him a big spark with the 2-run homer, but then the relievers gave it back. Then Alvarez, 3-run homer in the ninth, tied the game again. Robertson gave up 2 runs, which is bad. But 3-run homer by Pete Alonso, who prior to that 3-run homer had a wretched game. Double plays, bad strikeouts, pop-ups. They needed this win. Battling back twice to lose would have just been like the most devastating loss of the season, in a season of fucking losses. But Pete Alonso, who has been in a horrendous slump, hit the 3-run homer to get the win. Now, here's the big thing. And I should also mention Kodai Senga. Awesome tonight. He was awesome tonight. Hopefully, this is Senga finally finding his control and finding the strike zone. And he can actually pitch well. Because he had not pitched well. But they got to build on this win. They got to build on this win. They can't go out tomorrow and lay another flat egg. It's day game. The Rays are a good team. They got to find a way to win that game tomorrow. Otherwise, it's a wash. This is the type of win that could spark a season. Is there any spark in this team? And by the way, Daniel Vogelbach, he has to go. That at bat, where he stood there watching, and the first ball that was called a ball caught the corner. That wasn't it. That could have been called a strike. He watched 3 straight pitches right on a motherfucking tee. And Buck was out to manage today. The Rays stealing bases. I don't know if I could blame Alvarez on a lot of these steals, especially when Ottavino's out there. Ottavino. They gotta find better relievers. If Ottavino's the second best reliever, this team's in trouble. But is this the win that sparks this team to life? We'll find out in a couple of days.
And, you know, Frank could have been talking about the San Diego Padres. He's talking about the Mets, of course. We know Frank's affiliated with the Mets, and his rants are about the Mets. But I, like I said before, I wanted to present to you a more docile Frank than the usual Frank we hear from. And I am going to try and get him on the program. Hopefully we'll be able to have a good chat about my former team when I was growing up, the New York Mets. All right, time to get to our guest now, and I'm looking forward to this. This is another person that's from the Locked On podcast that I introduced you to 2 weeks ago with Javier.
You are Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we indeed have Lauren from the Locked On Red Sox podcast, and I believe she's on the phone. Hey, Lauren.
Hello. How's it going?
Very good. Very good. We have a day off here today, so I don't have to watch any Padres baseball and get upset again.
We don't want that.
No. Definitely not. Well, it's good having you on. You have the honor of being the first female on my program.
Wow, what an honor.
Yeah, it's strange. I maybe they're afraid of me because I'm Friar Phil and I can be a bit salty. But every one that I approached for the last couple of years, just, you know, they couldn't do it time scheduling, or they didn't want to go on the, you know, radio. They call it radio, even though it's a podcast. So you're the first.
I am honored. I'm excited. And hopefully I set the bar.
Oh, of course you will. Because I've been watching some of the Locked On Red Sox videos. And in fact, I'm going to try and work a lot with some more of you folks when we start playing some teams that we're not used to playing, like the Boston Red Sox today. So let's start out. Tell me a little bit about yourself, how you got involved with the Locked On Red Sox.
Yeah, so this was, wow, almost 2 years ago. An old friend of mine, Gabrielle, was actually hosting the podcast, and then she stepped away for a full-time opportunity, a writing opportunity. So there was an opening, and two of the folks at Locked On mentioned it to the channel manager that they had someone in mind, and lo and behold, here I am. So I've had two co-hosts throughout my time there, and now right now I'm flying solo, but it's been fun. I grew up in Massachusetts. I grew up a Red Sox fan. I cover the Red Sox, among other Boston sports, full-time in my day job. So it's been a lot of fun to, you know, write about them and also talk about them. And even though it was a terrible, no good season last year, they're off to a better start than I think many imagined this year. So it's fun because you cover a team that goes through a lot of ups and downs. You cover the team that has a very angry fan base toward ownership. So it's, I keep saying the word fun. I think that's the best way to describe it because every day is a new adventure with this team.
Same with the Padres. Yeah, and Boston is 24-20 now. And they're sadly in last place, but that division is really a very tough one. And the Padres are 20-24. And we're both 8 games behind the leaders of our divisions. Ours happens to be the crappy Los Angeles Dodgers. You'll be happy to know I don't like the New York Yankees, though.
All right. Well, then, you know what? Then we're on the same page regardless.
Yeah. I grew up a Mets fan from the time I was a little kid. The first game I went to was in 1969 with my father. I was 6 years old, and that was, of course, the Miracle Mets season of 1969. I believe it was a playoff game that we attended. And that was the first time I went there, and I fell in love with the game and the stadium and the cotton candy and the Cracker Jack that you could actually buy for 75 cents instead of $10 now at the stadium.
Yeah, yeah. Times certainly have changed, that's for sure.
Oh, that's definitely for sure. So that's a long time for me watching baseball, 54 years and counting now. I don't like to think about that, though.
You're in your prime.
I guess so, yeah. I guess 60 is the new prime. I'll be 60 May 24th. So, yeah, the Red Sox seem like they're doing a little bit better than they were doing earlier in the year. I like the kid Yoshida. He seems to be doing really well for the team.
100%. I absolutely love that he's just been such an impact player for the Red Sox the second he came here. And there were a lot of questions about him because he's never played in Major League Baseball. He's never played in America. So would that his talent from Japan be able to transfer into MLB? And it has. He's had, you know, some issues with some hitting some fastballs, but he's made the adjustments on the fly. And I think, you know, being able to contribute each night is only adding to the confidence he has at the plate and also in the field. So right now he's looking like a very good pickup for the Red Sox and a very good offseason signing. And I can only imagine he's going to get better as he continues to get used to MLB. You know, we're only 44 games into the season. We got 122-ish more to go. So he's still got a ways. I don't want to say got a ways to go, but that's in a good way. Like, he still has some strides to make, and I think he's going to hit those.
I'm sure he will. We have two Asian-born players on our team. We have from Japan, we've got Yu Darvish, who's our pitcher, one of our pitchers. And then we have Ha-Sung Kim. He's from South Korea. And kind of the same story with him, too. He's been with us, what, 3 years now, three seasons, I think. And it took him a little while to get used to pitching and the speed of the ball and 100 mile per hour, you know, fastballs coming down the middle at you.
Right.
Because I guess it's different in South Korea with, you know, how they play and how they pitch. But over the last 3 years, he's gotten much better. He's in a slump sometimes, but then he gets himself out of it and gets a couple of good hits, and he's back on track again. But you can see the noticeable difference between when he first started with the team and came over to the United States and now. And I'm sure that's going to happen with Yoshida as well. Like you said, the more time that goes on with him, the more he'll get to be an even better player. And I think he's going to be one of the main players that's talked about for quite a while with the Boston Red Sox.
It certainly seems that way right now. I mean, I feel like every time, even when the Red Sox lose, he did something to impact the game, and to whether it's to not have it get out of control as it could have, or being the one to produce the offense. You know, he's making an impact, win or lose, and I think that's what's really important, is you have somebody there who you can almost count on, and that's really reliable, who's going to help you at least try to win this game.
Well, today we're trying to learn a little bit more about the Red Sox before we play them tomorrow, and I'd like you to tell me a bit about the pitching staff that you have. How's the pitchers we're going to face starting tomorrow? And it looks like Paxton is pitching for you, and you get Blake Snell from us.
Yeah, so James Paxton is, you know, he just came back from a lat injury, and he injured his lat when he was rehabbing from Tommy John. So last week he made his first start since 2021, since April 2021. And he did really well. He didn't get the win, but he struck out 9 batters. He looked like he was in control. And I think most importantly, he said after the game that he really felt like himself. And when he's good, he's really good. When he's feeling himself, that's dangerous to batters. So hopefully he can carry that momentum into the game against the Padres. you know, and it's also the Padres also haven't faced James Paxton in a very long time either. And he also hasn't faced major league lineups, you know, one time since 2021. So I think that both teams could use that to their advantage. I think the Padres could come out and jump all over him early, but I also think Paxton could come out and show exactly what he did in his last outing and build off of his last outing and try to fool the batters and get to them early. And I know that Blake Snell has struggled a bit this year. Yeah, I know he's 1-5. So I think that, I don't think this is the Blake Snell that is known throughout the league. I think he's much better than his record shows. But I think Paxton is going to really kind of try to give this to the Padres. They know, you know, it's a 9-game road trip for them. They want to start it off on a high note, and they just won 2 out of 3 against the Mariners. So momentum's on their side, and momentum is on James Paxton's side.
That's good. I wish it was on our side, though. Blake Snell tends to be slow in the beginning of seasons. It happened last season, too. The second half, he's like lights out. So he's getting better. He's been better the last couple of starts. So I'm sure he'll give the Boston batters a run for their money. I think, though, the only thing that will help the Boston Red Sox succeed tomorrow, well, this is just one of the things with our beloved Padres. One of the things is the problem we have with runners in scoring position. We just can't manage to get runners in scoring position home. Yesterday, and this is why I went into a rage and did one of my raging videos yesterday. The team itself, it's just not one guy, but the team can't manage to get a timely hit when the bases are loaded. They had the bases loaded 3 times yesterday. 3 times. And out of those 3 times that they had the bases loaded, they only scored 2 runs. And we ended up losing by a score of 4-3. And Kansas City, of course, took the series. So that might be something that will work to the advantage of the Boston Red Sox pitchers and the defense going into tomorrow's game. We have Sale, a left-hand pitcher, going on Saturday, and you guys will see Joe Musgrove from us.
Yeah, Chris Sale started off the season kind of shaky, and he's another one too. You know, he's been working his way back from injury. He also had Tommy John, and then he had some setbacks, and then he got his pinky blown off by a comebacker from the Yankees, and then he broke his wrist while he was rehabbing the pinky. So he's just had a slew of injuries and bad injury luck, and he has really started to shake the rust off, which, kind of like I said about Paxton, is bad news for the Padres, because he's coming off a really strong performance. He went into the eighth inning and he got an out in the eighth inning, and that's huge for the Red Sox. And if he can put that together again, or a performance like that, and I have no reason to think he won't, because I think he's beginning to find his groove and kind of get back to that vintage Sale. And he's kind of at an advantage because he hasn't pitched in, you know, close to 3 years on a regular rest schedule. So his arm hasn't been used too much, and now he's stretching it out, and it's really strong. He looks like he's in command of his pitches. He's really confident on the mound, and I'm really liking what I've seen the last 2 starts from him. And they say third time's a charm, so if he can string together 3 really good starts, that's going to be really good for the Red Sox. Obviously, bad news for the Padres, but I think that Chris Sale is somebody who constantly goes out there and competes, and he always gives his all. He gives 110% every single outing. And I think that it's just a matter of him continuing to build up his strength and string together these big starts. I mean, he's 3-2 now. His ERA to begin the season was 12 or 13, and it's 5.40 now, which is a little high for a starter, but it's coming down. And he's really starting to tap into his potential, and I think we'll see more of that on Saturday.
Joe Musgrove dropped a weight on his toe and broke it. So he can relate to broken bones and sail tomorrow. His ERA is 6.63. Now, the reason for that is we had that series in Mexico with San Francisco. And of course, that place is, what, the 7,500 feet or something like that, the elevation of Mexico City. And it was more of a launching pad than Colorado Rockies Stadium is. So, you know, he got hit up for a bunch of hits there, and that's what raised his ERA. He's 1-1 now on the season. And again, you know, he had that accident dropping the weight on his toe and the broken toe, and he's been slowly coming back because he really didn't get much spring training. So, like Snell, each start he's had so far has gotten better and better, and he's getting back to that ace of our pitching staff that, well, at least we hope he is, that we have all enjoyed. Klubler, right-hand pitcher, going on Sunday, and you get Waka, who just came off of a great start, just missed a no-hitter.
Yeah, Michael Waka, he's probably the one I'm most worried about in this rotation. He's been really strong for the Padres, and obviously he's familiar with the Red Sox having pitched for them last year. So, and Corey Kluber has really struggled this year, to say the least. And I don't know, I mean, we're still early into the season, though I do think that we kind of have a good grasp on what players will bring to this team. I still think Kluber can turn it around, but I'm not as confident in him as I am Dale, as I am even Paxton, even though he's only pitched one game. But Michael Waka's just been great. You mentioned, you know, he almost had a no-hitter. I don't know if there's any other pitcher who's flirted with no-hitters the way that Michael Waka has throughout his career. But he's really showing that he's can still be serviceable to a team. He's only 31. It's not like he's, you know, 39, 40 years old, and or he's, you know, quote-unquote old for an athlete. So he still has a lot in the tank, and he's showing that this year. And Kluber, I mean, there's still time for him to turn it around and show that he can be good enough for the Red Sox. But I think Sunday is the one that's circled where I'm like, ooh, this could get ugly fast, especially if Waka continues to dominate lineups like he has.
Let's hope.
Let's not hope, but yeah, well, let's hope for you.
You gotta give me at least one day.
Absolutely.
Of a win. Anything for you. Out of the three there. It's really important that we win the series, though. We got to start winning series, and that's, you know, a problem. And like I said, you know, the problem is mainly that we can't score. And if we do, we're lucky. You know, we were lucky yesterday. Cronenworth got a home run. They batted in two runs from three times. They had the bases loaded, but that's not good enough, because this is not the team we were promised at the beginning of the season. This, you know, scary team, this scary lineup with all these superstars on there that'll make even the best team cringe. You know, nonsense. Right now, it wouldn't make anybody cringe. Well, it makes me cringe a little bit because when I watch what they do, it just drives me insane. So is there anything with the Boston Red Sox that's going on that drives you insane right now, or is it pretty steady going with them?
Oh, man. I don't know if it's the inconsistency with the offense. I mean, the offense is good, but they were just swept by the St. Louis Cardinals. And then they struggled against the Mariners in the first game. They figured it out that the bats really turned it on. So they did have that scoring with runners in scoring position problem last year. So I completely understand how infuriating it is to watch those opportunities get wasted, especially when that could have been the difference in any one of the games. But I think, too, the starting pitching needs to be a little bit better. I'm content, I guess, is the word I could use, but Tanner Houck, the Padres won't see him, but he struggles the second time through the lineup. I think he should be in the bullpen. There's going to be a logjam in that bullpen soon. So I think it's more of the unknown. I'm somebody who just absolutely hates the unknown. I like to have plans. And to look at this roster, the pitchers in particular, and think, okay, there's going to be some moves that need to be made because Garrett Whitlock is going to be activated soon. Cutter Crawford's getting activated. So there's log jams here. Who are the odd men out? Is somebody else from the starting rotation going to get moved to the bullpen like Nick Pivetta did? So just a lot of like what's going to happen. And I think this team has a good identity. I think that they have, you know, really good players on this team. They're playing for one another. I just think that if the pitching here, if they can figure out the starting rotation, maybe they wouldn't be last in the AL East. But that's hard to say because, as you mentioned in the beginning, it's a very, very tough division. And it's always going to be this tough. But it's more fun that way when all the teams are competitive and above 500. But you look at this pitching, and I think that this is kind of the one black cloud that hangs over them. But if that can get sorted out, they have the potential to be more dangerous than they are right now.
Do you think there'll be some trades by the trade deadline?
I think it really depends where they are come the trade deadline. And I think if they're, you know, hovering around the record they are now, like four games above 500, maybe in the chase for a wild card, I think there will be some trades. And I think, you know, they have, I keep saying log jam, but they have that at a lot of positions with injured players. You still have questions at shortstop. You have a log jam in the outfield. You have the log jam at second base. And now it's going to become, you know, do they trade some of those players? Do they go out and get somebody who's, you know, maybe a veteran with postseason experience to kind of fill those voids as well? I think, and I said this last year about the trade deadline, that Chaim Bloom has a very big trade deadline ahead of him. And I think that very well could be the case again this year if the Red Sox are in the hunt for a wild card spot.
Sounds good. I don't know what we're going to do by the trade deadline. AJ Preller constantly surprises us with what he does. We'll see what happens with that. Let's talk about offense for a little bit. I see you all have Justin Turner on the team. He used to be a Padre killer when he was with the Dodgers. And it's weird seeing him now in a Boston uniform because I'm so used to seeing him in the Dodger blue. But I'm getting used to it. Anyhow, anybody that could possibly be a Padre killer offensively tomorrow, Saturday, or Sunday?
I would keep our eyes on Alex Verdugo, Jared Duran, and Tristan Casas. And I'm saying Casas because even though his batting average is low right now and he's not making the most contact, we have seen the power that he can possess. And we've seen him work pitchers. He has seen them work counts, you know, 14, 15 pitches only to draw a walk. So he is really, you know, doing the most against a pitcher, even if he's not hitting. But Jaron Duran can't stop hitting. I think he's really found a groove at the plate after really struggling last year to kind of find his place within the Red Sox organization. And Alex Verdugo, he was removed from the game on Wednesday, but it was just precautionary. He's got some groin tightness, but he expects to be in the lineup Friday. He's really, really feeling himself. I feel like a lot of players have done a complete 180, but he's certainly one of them. And I think that whenever he's at the plate, it's a threat that he could do some damage.
And especially, does he do better with left-hand pitcher or right-hand pitcher?
Tristan Casas has trouble against lefties. I know that. And then the other two, I just feel like it doesn't matter who's on the mound. It could be an ambidextrous pitcher, and they would be able to figure out how to put the ball in play, whether it's a bloop single, home run, line drive. I think that those three in particular, save for Tristan Casas against lefties, have, you know, not they're good targets to circle when you're looking at the Red Sox lineup this weekend.
The only lefty we have going this weekend is Snell. The other two, Musgrove and Waka, are right-hand pitchers.
So maybe Casas will have some luck against those guys. He's hit some towering home runs. That's a big guy out there. He's built like a house, and he has tremendous power. So I hope I see it. I know that it would serve you better if you do not see the power he can possess, but I need to see this guy heat up.
It blows my mind when I see somebody hit something over the Great Wall of Boston.
It's a crazy because sometimes those balls get hit into the parking lot back there, and just the way they travel, and that's a high, very, very high wall. It's far out there. So just to see, anyone who can even hit it into the monster is just insane with their power.
It is. It's really something to see. So we've got those folks we have to watch out for. How is Justin Turner doing anyhow?
He's been great. The last two games, he's had a home run in each game. He really led the offense in Wednesday's win. He really kind of propelled them to a win. And he's been great. I think he's got his batting average is over 300. The number escapes me after I checked this morning, but he's been a really good asset to this team. And I think too, when Tristan Casas needs a night off, he can slide into first base, but he's been great in that DH role. And he also adds a veteran presence to this team that I think does go underrated in some regard, because this team is young. And you have Rafael Devers just signed their big extension, Alex Verdugo, and you have somebody in there who's been to the postseason, who's lost in the postseason, who knows what it's like to be part of, bad teams and bad streaks throughout the season. So to have that experience and that presence, I think, has really benefited the Red Sox this year. And it's benefited him because he's like I said, he really was the leader of the offense on Wednesday for the Red Sox.
Wow. So I have to watch out for that. So many unknowns, but I like the unknown as well sometimes. But I tell you, it's bad when you lose confidence with your team. And that's, to the point I'm almost at. Now, we'll see what happens with the Red Sox over the weekend. They had a players-only meeting yesterday to try... the Padres just kind of sort themselves out. So you'll either see more of the same over the weekend, or you'll see the new improved Padres lineup that can actually hit the ball, doesn't lead balls, that's in the strike zone, that's a obvious cookie, go by and get strike one, strike two, and then swing at strike three when the bases are loaded. So hopefully that will work out for the Red Sox. But for us, I hope we get the better, new, improved bunch of guys coming out there.
The Red Sox just had a players-only meeting on Tuesday because Alex Verdugo was not liking the way they were playing, and they now have rattled off two straight wins. So maybe that's what the Padres need, to just kind of give them a kick in the pants and get them in the right direction. And sometimes that's all you need, is someone to speak up and be like, guys, what are we doing? Look at our lineup. Look who we got in the offseason. Look who we've had on this team. Why aren't we better than this?
Yeah. And that's something I'm sure they ask themselves, because I expect better. You know, you're in slumps some of the time. That's going to happen to every baseball player. Whether they play Little League or whether they play Major League Baseball. But for a whole team to be slumping, or half the lineup, it just doesn't work. Now, with the Padres, after the Mexico City series, Tatis brought home a sombrero, and they kept that Mexican flavor going. When they win games, they have a piñata in the clubhouse. Some people are saying, well, they need to put away the sombrero and the piñatas, when they win. But, when this team has fun, when they have fun with Tatis, when they have fun being out on the field, they tend to do better and they play better. And part of the problem with the Padres now is that they haven't played too great, and they're almost, not in despair, but just not as happy and festive as they were a few weeks ago. So hopefully they'll get back to that. Now, like I just mentioned, we have a sombrero that gets put on the head of people that hit home runs. What does the Boston Red Sox have? Do you have any bit for when somebody hits a home run?
They do. It's new this year. So last year they had a home run cart. There was a laundry cart in the dugout, and you would just get in and go for a ride. But this year, it was a lot of fun, and it looked like it was fun. But this year they've adopted something new. They have inflatable dumbbells, which stems from Masataka Yoshida, whose nickname is Macho Man. And there was this video of him with dumbbells, and they went out, they got some inflatable dumbbells. So when you hit a home run, you take those and just kind of pump them up through the dugout. And I love it. I love when teams have that little bit. I don't care if you're down, 12-1 and you hit a home run. Sometimes that you just need that morale and something to look forward to. And it just adds a little bit of personality to the teams. So I love that they have something new, and I love that they have got it from Yoshida. And that probably makes them just feel even more welcome on the Red Sox.
Oh, I'm sure it does. And, a lot of people I see on Twitter are also saying about the Padres that they should not smile, if they're losing the game in the dugout. They shouldn't have any fun, laugh. They should be just, totally serious. And again, this team doesn't play really good, totally serious. They need to have fun. And, we saw that, too, when we lost Tatis to injury. The team was doing really, really good. They were having fun. They were getting wins and stuff. But as soon as he left, it's like somebody took the air out of the tires and they started not doing too well. And I think they need to find that happy medium where they're not, celebrating a loss, but celebrating wins and being more of a happy-go-lucky team instead of a struggling team.
Yeah, I think I speak for any baseball fan. It's more fun watching your team win. And when you have a team like the Padres, who have spent so much money, who have a very, very all-star studded lineup, you expect more. And you mentioned a happy medium here. What does that look like? How can they reach that happy medium? And how can they, start getting back to winning and having fun? Because, it's more fun when you're winning, right? You have a lot more, happiness, and you have a lot more, better things or more fun things to talk about when the team's winning. And when they're losing, it's easy to sit back and nitpick everything and wonder what the heck is going on. Because when you have a team, and I've mentioned this, when you have a team like the Padres, they're definitely better than how they played this season and the last few games in particular.
Yeah, they are. They are. And I know they are in the bottom of my gut. I know they're better, and I just hope this player's only meeting helped. Now, you said that the fan base is angry with the ownership. What's going on with that?
So with the ownership has a tradition where they let homegrown talent go, or they let them walk. They lowball them with offers, and they just kind of come out and say, well, we did our best. They did that with Xander Bogaerts this past offseason. They've done it with John Lester. They've done it, I just feel like people are like, they're probably going to do it with Tristan Casas. They were worried about Rafael Devers, but he did sign his 10-year extension. So, and they did this with Mookie Betts. They did end up trading Mookie Betts. They didn't let him walk, but there's a lot of anger toward the ownership. And then you bring in, after you fire Dave Dombrowski, who came in and did his job. He got the Red Sox a World Series. He blew up the farm system to get the players needed. And he wasn't afraid to make the moves and the trades. And then you have Chaim Bloom, who is not signing people to massive deals. He's not making the big trade. He had a very big offseason ahead of him, and a lot of people were very angry about it. I think some people will take back some of that anger, given how some of the players have performed. but the still, you know, the idea of not signing Xander Bogaerts when they had plenty of opportunity well before he even got to free agency. And now you have a gaping hole at shortstop because Kike Hernandez is just not a shortstop. Trevor Story had elbow surgery. He will be back at some point this year, just not, we're not very clear when. And, you know, they're plugging and playing people at shortstop, and it all goes back to, well, if ownership just did their job and kept Xander Bogaerts, this wouldn't have been an issue. And it's just in last year's trade deadline, when the Red Sox were showing a glimmer of hope that they could be a competitive team, they traded away Christian Vasquez and then just felt like there was no direction. And I think that's the biggest thing, that fans feel like it's not a big direction for this team. And they're not really getting straight answers. They're just getting, well, we're doing what's best for the team, financial flexibility. And, you know, fans don't want to hear that.
Blah, blah, blah. Nobody wants to hear that.
Yeah, corporate speak. And, you know, it saves their butts. And, you know, at the end of the day, Red Sox fans, they're incredibly passionate. You know, they're used to winning, they're used to success, and they want competitive baseball. You know, it's not even about the World Series, but when you're fielding a team that doesn't even look like it could reach the postseason, they have all this reason to be angry. I mean, they just made the ALCS in 2021, and all of a sudden it seems like in 2022 everything went wrong for them. And you can only blame the manager so much. He's only doing everything he can with what he has in front of him. And you have to go above him and be like, look, you are not giving, you're setting the manager up to fail. You're setting this team up to fail. And now it's okay. I think they're, you know, their heads are above water. I don't think ownership will ever be out of the woods with this fan base, given how much they've been through with, you know, homegrown players. And yes, there's four World Series in, you know, since 2004, and that's great. But I feel like the ownership uses that almost as like when you hear Yankees fans be, you know, say 27 rings. Yeah. And I was like, you know, we don't, and then I know like that's kind of become tired now because we don't care about the four world. I mean, we do care about the four World Series. Of course we do. But they want, you know, they want another one to hang their hat on. Same with the Yankees. They want another World Series. It's been a long time for them. And it's just, you look at ownership because I think that's what they see. I think that they see Alex Cora is a good manager, that the players there, they want to be there, but it's just not the right mix of players. So, I mean, this is, I said this last year too, that this is a big year for Chaim Bloom, because if they don't make the postseason, and you just kind of look and be like, what are you doing? What is the direction of this team? Because for so long there was a direction, and that was to win the World Series. And now it's like, oh my God, just don't finish last in the AL East. We're begging.
Yeah, at least that. At least that. God.
Personal problems.
We're very lucky. We're very lucky that we have Peter Seidler as the owner and that he's wanted to spend the money he's spent this year. We have Bogaerts, Tatis, Machado, just to name three of them, that are fairly expensive. So this guy, you know, put out all of this money to build this team that's World Series ready, and they're just not performing that way. And I think that's the thing that rattles the fan base the most. Because we know what these guys are capable of. You know, we know what's on the back of their freaking baseball cards. Yeah, we know what they can do. They just need to start doing it, you know. Sometimes you just got to shut up and do.
That, it's as simple as that, right? Just, like you said, shut up and do. You have, the Padres have spent so much money building this roster. And how they're performing now is not how they should be performing in the least bit. And then, you know, Red Sox fans are very familiar with Xander Bogaerts and how he can be very crucial to a team. And you have Tatis and you have Machado, you have, you know, you can just go down the lineup and it's like, wow, that guy is good. And not just like, ah, he's okay. Like he could be a ninth hitter. Like, no, like your ninth hitter could probably be maybe somebody's sixth or fifth batter in another lineup. So just to see how the Padres are, you know, struggling. I was shocked because I'm like, there's no way that they don't give it a serious run for the World Series this year. And yes, it's May. I'm not going to you know, sit and put in, you know, my final predictions for October. But you would think that they'd be better where than on May 18th. I think today's the 18th than what they are right now.
Yeah, you would think so, but we will see over the weekend. Okay, is there anything else before we run out of time that you want to tell me about the Boston Red Sox that we should be aware of?
Listen, this team could come in and sweep the entire series, or the Padres could bounce back. I feel like there's not really an in-between. I feel like one team will sweep this series. The Red Sox can be very scrappy, but I think this is also, this could be, you know, the Padres are back home now, and, you know, they're playing in their home park, and that this could shift their momentum. So I'm excited for this series. It's a series I've had circled on my calendar, and I hope that, for my sake, that I see the Red Sox that we've seen the last two games.
Yes, for your sake, and for our sake, I hope they tank. I mean, seriously, tank. You know, just for the weekend. But we will see. Okay, Lauren, thank you so much for coming on the program. And we'll chat again sometime during the season, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on. This was fun. And let's hope just for a good competitive series this weekend.
Yes, that's the best we can hope for, because we can't predict the future. Even though right now it looks bleak for us, but who knows? We'll see what happens. All right. Good talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks again.
Take care.
You too.
And thank you all for tuning in once again to the program. Tell a friend. If you feel so compelled to do so, either on the Spotify link to the program or the main page where the where the podcast lives, if you feel up to supporting the program, it will be very, very appreciated. All right, out of time. There's our out of time music. Let's hope, like Lauren said, that we have a good competitive series over the weekend, that the players' meeting has done some good for the San Diego Padres, and that hopefully we win the series. Meanwhile, take care of yourself. Watch your back. Keep your eyes and your heart open. I'll see you the next time.